know, maybe that even that daily experience. Because we are something of a segregated city, like all parts of the United States, most parts of the United States. And so, yeah, get out there and support those businesses. I'll give you the last word. We only have about a minute left. What are you looking to do as you go forward with your job as policy director at APANO?
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm just feeling super inspired by the way that folks have been reaching out and wanting to support. I think the way that, like, different identities have been pitted against each other is kind of false, and I'm feeling like there's a lot of solidarity between all of our communities here in Portland fighting against sort of racial violence of any kind. So, yeah, trying to hold some hope. Yeah.
Right on. Well, best of luck, and reach out whenever you want to if you have anything that you're looking for a KBOO audience for people to support. I'd be glad to announce it. So thank you very much, Richa. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, this has been Paul Rowland talking with Richa Poudal of the APANO, Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. Thanks to Sonia, my board operator, and keep on listening. Bye-bye, everybody.
Musicians in Solidarity is thrilled to announce this year's Sing Time Frolics Festival, online and real-time, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 26th through 28th, with guest artists Gordon Bach and Carol Roll, Stephanie Ann Johnson, Beth Wood, Lauren Sheehan, and Jermaine Malone, plus over 30 workshops and song circles. Come to sing or just come to listen. To register, go to portlandfolkmusic.org.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
County. I'm Rob Solomon. Thank you very much for joining us. We are fortunate today to have some time with our senior senator. Taping day is March 12th. The president has just signed the COVID relief bill. The vaccination rollout in Oregon is making inroads, but the pandemic is still very much here. The CDC says wearing masks and other safety protocols must continue as we battle against the virus and its mutations. Some states are opening up more against scientific advice and President Biden's direction. It continues to be a difficult time, and today we'll explore just what can be and is being done to help our country, state, and our county. We are in a time when the pain of countless years of systemic racism has been placed in a spot where it has become harder to deny. As the mayor of King City noted in a recent interview, as tough a year as 2020 has been, it was a year of revealing racist issues and pervasive inequities and more. How is our federal government responding? I'll put that question to the senator. We will take a look at the Capitol siege from the point of view of someone who was there. He was in the thick of that horror. Who is to blame? What should be done? We'll take a look at that. We'll also consider the art of governing. How can the Democratic Party pass its agenda with such a thin majority in the House and a razor-thin majority in the Senate. Seems pretty difficult. The senator's time was limited, but we managed to cover a few additional topics. If you have comments, contact me at rob@washco.org. Allow me to introduce our guest today. We welcome senior U.S. Senator, Senator Ron Wyden. Senator Wyden has served Oregonians and the nation in the Senate since 1996, rather. And in addition to various committee memberships, he serves as the chair of the Senate Finance Committee. Senator Wyden previously served in the U.S. House of Representatives representing Oregon's 3rd Congressional District from 1981 to 1996. Welcome, Senator, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Rob, thanks for having me. It'll be fun.
Definite pleasure. Right into the question, sir. After weeks of what appeared to be tough negotiating, Congress has passed, the day before yesterday, we're taping on the 12th of March, the COVID relief bill. How will that $1.9 trillion bill help care for the health of our people and our wounded economy, especially in Oregon and in Washington County?
Rob, we have, of course, are still wrestling with a public health nightmare. And we have folks who are looking for assistance in fighting the virus. We have lost businesses. We have young people who are trying to get a good education. We've got challenges even with respect to communication. I can't tell you how many places I have dead spots, you know, when you're trying to get, you know, connection so you can be online for work or for school. And so it's a lot of heavy lifting to do. The package that passed here this week, about, maybe 55-60% of it went to the Senate Finance Committee. And we handled, for example, the $1,400 checks that people in Washington County, if they have direct deposit, a lot of people are going to be getting those checks in the next few days. We were able to expand the child tax credit. That's going to help a lot of families and a lot of kids in Washington County nationally. It's going to reduce the child poverty rate 50%. And then I authored the unemployment packages, first the $600 legislation, which reduced poverty-covered gig workers, the self-employed independent contractors, and then the most recent package, which is $300, also covering those workers for the first time. And we were also able to get tax forgiveness for them for 2020. So there are a lot of benefits here that I think are going to help people. They're going to help the economy. They're going to increase demand for goods and services because people are going to be able to go out there and pay for essentials and rent and food and healthcare and buying sneakers for their kids.
Sounds just like what the economy needs, Senator. What about our health? What about helping to get shots in arms? How is that bill going to help there?
Well, it is going to set a very strong timeline for getting folks eligible. As we know, the president has been talking about May. And what I can tell you is, and people ask, well, Ron, what is your role? As chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, I've said the best thing I can do for Oregonians is everything possible to increase the availability of vaccines. And I favor, and the Biden people clearly have moved in the right direction on this, expanded use of the Defense Production Act. Because if you can produce the largest amount of vaccines possible, that makes it less likely you won't have one deserving group pitted against another, which, as we know, a number of the states have been wrestling with.
Most definitely. Due largely to the parliamentarian's ruling, there was no opportunity to include that $15 minimum wage in the COVID relief bill. I believe there's a lot of support for that increase, and I understand that you have a plan B. Senator, what is your plan B?
Well, what what I and Senator Sanders and a number of others were interested in doing was saying that if you look historically, when these large companies, say an Amazon, you know, for example, when they raise wages, that usually ripples through the broader economy. And so what we really tried to do here was have some carrots, some sticks. Now the carrots, I mean, as chairman of the finance committee, I've always been sympathetic to small businesses trying to deal with a transition. We could have tax credits. And we were looking at a way to require the larger businesses, if they weren't paying a living wage, to do so. And basically what happened was we got the parliamentarians ruling and we had like 72 hours. And I went to school on a basketball scholarship. And I can just tell you the shot clock ran out on us.
Gotcha. 24 seconds is not that long a time. Sticking to the passage of the COVID relief bill for just one more minute, it was interesting to see that Senate Republicans didn't seem open to negotiations. From my perspective, I wasn't there. And the hard work seemed to be to ensure that everyone in the Democratic caucus would support the bill. It worked this time. How can the Democratic Party count on passing legislation in the Senate with such a razor-thin majority from here on in?
Well, Rob, we're always going to try to build a bipartisan coalition. That was the case here. What happened here, based on kind of my assessment, was something of a politically unique situation. You had Republican voters saying that the items in the bill were very appealing to them, like the $1,400 checks, but yet none of their members of Congress voted for them. So there was a huge gap between what Republican voters were saying they thought of what was in the bill and what Republican elected officials did when they voted. And I guess you'll have to ask them why.
Well, I can ask them why, but the concern I have is that the Republicans historically in modern times seem to have stuck together to if it's to enable legislation or to not allow legislation or to not allow Supreme Court nominations. If the Republicans are successful with the minority leadership in staying together, that means any one of the 50 Democratic senators can hold things up for what they believe is good reason for their constituents or whatever it may be. I find that a little frightening.
Right. Again, you have to start, as I have outlined, being ready to go both tracks.
Yes.
I always want to be bipartisan. If people just say, hey, we're not really interested, then you've got to move to do what's necessary, you know, to protect the public. Now, in 2009, you might remember Mitch McConnell said his number one goal, pretty much as soon as Barack Obama was sworn in, was to make sure that Barack Obama was the one-term president.
I do remember.
If somebody's sole objective is to make other people fail, then you really got to look at alternatives, and that's what we did here.
I understand, and I hope that that will be able to continue. I'm still concerned about the power of one within the 50. Sir, what can the federal government do to keep the momentum for positive social change going that was moved, empowered by the tragic murder of George Floyd? Will the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act really have a positive impact, sir?
I think it would be very consequential. I mean, you know, you look through the various aspects of this legislation, chokeholds and the like. This is an issue that really has to focus on, are we going to ensure that there is fundamental justice afforded, particularly Black Americans? Given what we have seen on the streets, that hadn't been the case. Now, we're gonna have to try some new approaches. I got included in the COVID package legislation that is supported by both mental health organizations and people who have been interested in reforms in law enforcement. It's called the CAHOOTS bill. And because so much of the stress and tension on the streets involves mental health, mm-hmm. we want to use, and my legislation now law, we want to use the Medicaid program to make sure that when we're dealing with some of these problems on the streets, that mental health and police are both working together and utilizing the skills that they have to try to come up with solutions. There are many instances where sending out, you know, law enforcement, and law enforcement people will tell you that, is going to inflame matters. And then there are, you know, other instances where mental health people will say, look, this is something where we can work together.
By all means, I like to name the cahoots bill because you have law enforcement and mental health working in cahoots.
Correct.
It's
correct.
It's kind of cute. But sir, before we leave the George Floyd situation, I was impressed by so much of the protests, and it seems to have faded. And I'm a little bit concerned that without some real solid punch, and I know you're saying there's punch in that bill, that the movement's going to fade, and people who are angry are going to be angrier. I'm not asking to mollify, but I'm wondering if there's anything else the government can do to show leadership and to show concern.
I'll tell you, Rob, number one, it hadn't faded with me. And for example, on the Finance Committee, I'm very much zeroed in on the racial injustices of our healthcare system. For example, maternal mortality. And what I can tell you, and this will be a kind of our lodestar, is in many affluent suburbs, largely white, there's every manner of sophisticated healthcare service and technology and the like. And in many Black communities, it's almost a healthcare desert where there's a huge shortage of services and the like. And we see some of these inequities that have been part of the COVID response challenge. So if people are saying it's faded, I'll tell you, sure as hell isn't fading with me.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, sir. Some people have suggested that making Juneteenth a holiday might help. Some other people have suggested that might sound like patronizing. I'm just wondering what you think.
Well, I'd want to talk to people in the community about it, but I certainly think it sounds appealing.
Okay, thank you. With some states enacting legislation that threatens or makes it more difficult for some citizens to vote, and with so many states involved in redistricting, could you tell us how the For the People Act can help to safeguard voters' rights and enable equitable redistricting?
Well, what's going on in Georgia right now is just unacceptable. I mean, this idea of formally working to discourage Sunday voting, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what that's all about. That's about discouraging Black voters who come together on weekends and other times. So I will tell you by way, Rob, of starting this, I'm the nation's first senator elected by mail. And ever since 2002, I've been introducing legislation to let everybody in the country vote with a hand-marked paper ballot along the lines of what we do in Oregon. This last election, many people came up to me and said, Ron, your bill has passed even before it passed, because they said, as a result of the pandemic, we've all had to vote by mail, and what you've been saying all these years is right. So my sense is that that legislation coming from the House is very important. And certainly I'll be very much focused on promoting vote by mail, because I think we have a long track record in Oregon, decades now. By the way, the second senator elected in America by mail was Gordon Smith, my friend and a Republican. So we know how to vote right in a way that's got integrity, that's cost effective, and is voter friendly.
You've proven that vote by mail does not only elect Democrats. Or we as a state have proven that. Sir, what was your experience in the Capitol siege? And what should happen to those individuals and those, particularly those electeds who were either involved in the siege themselves or encouraged it?
Well, I believe, Rob, it was domestic terrorism. Domestic terrorism is defined as people using violence and intimidation to secure their political agenda. One of the areas that I've been investigating is I've asked the IRS to examine whether tax-exempt organizations were involved in assisting those domestic terrorists on that day, because tax-exempt organizations cannot have a tax exemption if they're engaged in unlawful behavior. So I've undertaken that project now as chairman of the Finance Committee.
Okay, excellent. But were you in the Capitol at the time of the siege?
I was. I was in fact in the Capitol. I was probably 20 yards away from the people who could have broken down the doors, and had they been able to do it, I think there would have been loss of life, yes.
And I think there were an awful lot of scared people that shouldn't have had to have been scared. That was an awful experience, I'm sure. My understanding as of today is that the FBI have identified some 400 people to press charges against. I heard that news item today. I believe it's accurate. What do you think should happen both to the folks that entered the Capitol unlawfully and the electeds that have been seen on video or live encouraging those people?
I don't believe anybody is above the law. I've started that conversation for quite some time, and I think that still includes Donald Trump.
Thank you very much. I think there are some other electeds as well. I was just thinking of the former president. Certainly, Senator Cruz was on tape seeming to spur folks, and there were other people as well. On a totally different matter, I have been told by several electeds that once elected to Congress, be it Senate or the House, most, if not all, members are advised to devote significant time to raising funds for their reelection on day one. This seems to be unfortunate, yet due to campaign costs, it's probably essential advice. What is Congress doing to change this dynamic to allow greater opportunity to focus on the people's business rather than re-election?
Well, Rob, you're absolutely right. There are a variety of reasons for it. Probably number one is the Citizens United Supreme Court case, which basically just threw open, you know, the doors and said, as a matter of law, there really wasn't any difference between the rich guy's checkbook and the poor guy's soapbox. They were the same. It was all protected by the First Amendment. I will tell you, I have a particular interest in a reform that people don't talk much about, and that is, if I had my way, the whole matter of campaigns and fundraising would be reduced to a few months every 2 years. So that heaven forbid people focus on their jobs. And that's what I'm doing. You know, I basically flew most of the night to get home. Tomorrow I'm gonna have a virtual town hall on the Oregon coast for many communities. That's to me how I spend my time.
Most definitely understood. I just got a note that we're running a little short on time. So just real quickly, do you think your effort to make daylight savings time permanent nationwide will be successful now that you've reintroduced the bill?
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, Marco Rubio and I have a bipartisan, you know, coalition going. And, you know, to me, this isn't that complicated, Rob. Why would you want to have all this confusion? People clock springing forward and backward and all the rest. I don't think it's that complicated. I think if you want more simplicity in our complicated lives, you just say, you know, let's get rid of this and give everybody another hour when they need it most, you know, particularly in the winter.
Understood. Congressman Blumenauer has been a loud voice for the federal legalization of marijuana to enable all those states that are selling it both for medical purposes as well as recreational purposes to be a little bit freer to do that as far as banking and things like that. From your perspective with the Senate Finance Committee, it seems like that could be an important position. position. How do you feel about the federal government taking a position on that?
Well, I think it's exceptionally important. Recently, Senator Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, Senator Cory Booker, very influential member of the Senate, and I announced that we were going to jointly put together a plan on cannabis to end the prohibition, have responsible regulation, have responsible taxation. And I think from the standpoint of jurisdiction, such a bill would go to the Senate Finance Committee, and that would be my responsibility.
Thank you. Senator, I've been told that you need to be going on to another call. I want to thank you so much for your generous time, and thank you again for all the effort on behalf of us Oregonians, and the people of Washington County. Sir, thank you.
Rob, thanks for what you're doing to focus public affairs on the real issues. I've really enjoyed being with you, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Thank you, Senator, for your time, your kind words, and your offer to come back and visit us again sometime. We will be in touch. To our listeners, we want your feedback. If you have questions or comments, email me directly at rob@insidewashco.org. We enjoy hearing from you, and we listen. Check out our website at insidewashingtoncounty.org for more than 50 recorded interviews available, or to subscribe to our podcast. Follow us on social media. We are on Facebook and Twitter. Do look forward with us to upcoming shows, which will cover issues in county government, our county's economic recovery, and more. Thank you, and see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Mark Berry.
I'm Mark Berry, the producer of Inside Washington County. Let me tell you about what's coming in April. Next week, we have a special encore show, a recent interview with Hillsborough Mayor Steve Calloway. That will be followed by a conversation with Commissioner Nafisa Fai, followed by Deanna Palm from Beaverton, and Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce exploring our economic recovery and more. Thank you.
Grimm. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This feels like home being here. Keep hip-hop alive.
I'm one of 2.7 million children in the United States that has been impacted by parental incarceration.
I've been in and out of foster care and been all over the place since she hasn't been in my life.
I came to prison broken.